Welcome to this edition of This is Design Intelligence, conversations with leadership voices in the built environment. This edition is sponsored by the Tricord Group, leading successful relationship constructs for over 25 years, and VIM, helping the architecture and design disciplines design, deliver, and operate better buildings for a better world. And now, your co-hosts, Dave Gilmore and Lynn Barrett.
Welcome. This is Lynn. Recently, the Design Futures Council convened in La Jolla, California at the Leadership Summit on Technology and Applied Innovation. My co-host, Dave Gilmore, was there and had a chance to sit down with Dr. Daniel Davis. Daniel is a career researcher whose focus is on how technology influences architecture and how architecture influences people. He earned a PhD in computational design at RMIT University in Australia. He served as the director of research at WeWork and is currently doing work for the architectural firm Hassell. He's been published numerous times in magazines such as Wired and Fast Company and the Harvard Business Review. For this edition of This is Design Intelligence, we'll listen in on their conversation.
This event that we're attending here in La Jolla, the Design Futures Council Leadership Summit on Technology and Applied Innovation, we've subtitled it this year Game Changers because we're encouraging our audience to change their game. They're going to have to change their game. We're almost demanding that they change their game because every year we show up here, we talk about exciting new futures of what's happening, and people nod and go, wow, and sometimes clap. But is it fundamentally changing their life? Is it changing how they practice, how they think and speak and behave in practice? And I dare say that it's not hitting the mark that I would like to see it hit. So we're going to push a different agenda this year, and we're going to identify what we believe to be the fundamental problems that we're each confronting. Then we're going to break out a bit, and we're going to spend some time seeing if these brilliant design thinkers in a rapid fashion can come up with pragmatic solutions to large problems. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. I think just like being able to work with really high caliber people on those kind of problems. And I think also giving them the space to actually sit back and think about it a little bit will be really, really useful. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what people kind of come up with.
Yeah, it should be good. You worked for a while at WeWork, which caught the imagination, certainly of the world, about what could be done to break the cycle of commercial real estate brokerage and space and how people would occupy space in a commercial context. What a fabulous idea. I've heard so many negative comments. People took shots at WeWork when they were way up there, and now they're taking more shots at them when they're down. And yet, what did we learn? And yeah. And there's so many wonderful lessons that came out of that, not just from the failure, but from the what it broke, allowing us new things. Do you have some thoughts on any of that, what the lessons learned?
Yeah, I feel like everyone's really caught up in the kind of palace intrigue of like what happened at WeWork. And I get that, like when everything went down, I spent probably like a month on the computer just refreshing Business Insider, trying to get the latest article, because it was extraordinary to see it happen. But I think what a lot of people in the industry miss is that underneath all the kind of chaos that was happening at the top of WeWork, there was some really like advanced technology. All the stuff that we talk about when we come to these conferences, like BIM, data management, IoT, user feedback, vertical integration, offsite manufacturing, like WeWork was doing all of it. And kind of, in my mind, it almost reminds me of like Xerox PARC or something where like, they had this thing that's maybe a couple of years, maybe even a decade ahead of where a lot of other people are currently, and maybe didn't quite fully realize the potential of a lot of that. But I think it's also going to be interesting to see what happens to the people that were at WeWork. You have this cohort of people, maybe 1,000, 2,000 people leaving right now that I've got used to the system of like creating architecture and creating space. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see as they kind of absorb back into other parts of the industry, how their kind of shift in expectation changes and what they might kind of, what might arise and flourish out of that as well.
I think so. I think the incubation of pragmatic ideas will accelerate if they can find footing someplace.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's maybe human nature that we kick things when it's down, but boy, I don't see it that way at all. I saw for the first time the possible realization of occupancy evaluation on a perpetual basis. You know, in architects, that's like, you know, the brass ring. If we could ever do post-occupancy evaluation, but we can't get it in our contracts. It's like, really?
Yeah.
These people have figured it out because they own the contract, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How do you use some construct of that to create new contractual instrumentation, which at the end of the day is so much better for the building owner and for the occupant to allow that? And there, but how do we deal with the idea? Just if you have any thoughts on it, people's self-delusion that privacy will somehow be kept because we signed a document that said privacy will be kept, and therefore IoT is being constrained around privacy dynamics.
Yeah, I think the privacy issue is like a really difficult one. Like, people definitely don't want to go back to their house and have the sense that they're getting spied on by Google or WeWork or whoever else, and they don't want it in their workplace either. I think it's just something that society's going to have to reckon with. Like, we're having the same thing around Facebook and around all the tech companies at the moment, as I think people have begun to realize just how much information things like our cell phones are giving out about us. And I think it's going to be easy. Like, I think it's both a cultural shift and a technological shift to enable some of that to happen. Yeah.
So our industry, I've changed my language. I used to call it AEC.
Yeah.
I've eliminated it altogether. Yeah. I call it the built environment industry. A friend of mine that you'll meet this evening, Dr. Laura Lee, encouraged me. We were in London in October, and she said, I want you to stop calling it AEC. I want you to start calling it built environment, because it's much more inclusive than architects, engineers, and constructors, you know? And we had this long discussion about it, and I converted. So
yeah,
with that as an aside.
Yeah, and I also feel like a lot of the new companies that are coming in, like Airbnb or Google, like, they don't think about it as we're doing architecture, we're doing engineering. They think about it as we're providing a product or a service to an end user, which happens to be spatial. And whether or not that adheres to like the standards of the industry,
it's a moot point, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, to the question at hand, everyone has become obsessed with data. It's a funny thing, because I was dealing in what we would call big data back in the 80s through some work with a couple of initialed government agencies that were dealing with that. And then, of course, pharmaceutical has been dealing with big data for a long time. But it seems over the last, we'll say, 5-6 years, at least the American built environment industry is just, it's all about data, right?
Yeah.
It's like a new discovery.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet I see so many, I call them silver bullet solutions, trying to be sold to fix your data problem or to reveal some brilliance out of your data. Are we over-obsessed with this? How ought we to be thinking about data and our expectations around it?
So I think for sure data is valuable, and if you have the right pieces of data, there's insights that you can glean from it that are going to be useful to a company. I think there's a couple of challenges that architecture firms are facing at the moment. One's that the kind of data that they have access to, particularly like spatial data, isn't high quality, and they're not able to compare one project to another. And the second is that they don't have a lot of success metrics. So even if you know how every building is designed in all the buildings that you've designed previously, if you don't know if people like them or not, or if you don't know if people are comfortable thermally in them, or if they're performing well in terms of like energy use.
So to the point of post or occupancy evaluations.
Yeah.
Right?
Then what is the use of that data? And so I think one of the real struggles in the industry at the moment is how do you collect that data and how do you, once you have it, turn it into something that actually has an impact on the business. And yeah, I think there's a lot of hype at the moment around the data, and there's a lot of kind of extrapolation of very small prototypes that they're saying like, yeah, we'll do that and just scale up 1,000 times and it'll like work out. But in reality,
it's a lot more hard.
Yeah.
So where does artificial intelligence, AI, machine learning come into play in this pile of data?
Yeah, I think machine learning is my preferred term for that, just because I don't think we're anywhere close to like making artificial intelligence. And it's a useful tool for drawing out patterns in data, but there's other ways that you could do that as well. You could run a regression analysis. You could just compare the means in two data sets. And so I think a lot of firms are kind of jumping to the end. They're like, we've got to use this like really complex, sophisticated method of like analyzing our data. And they're not even able to describe like the basic structure of that data or run these kind of more simple methods of analyzing the data. And I think for when you talk to someone who's a data scientist who works at, say, one of those big companies that does data, like they always do the simple stuff first, and then machine learning is like a tool of last resort when all the more simple methods kind of don't work.
Okay. You said something earlier about that we seem unable in most cases to understand if we've succeeded in one design versus another when if we move from project to project. And the question maybe is begging is, what is success?
Yeah.
Right? And I know in the world of business, when we think about investing in something, we set measures ahead of time at the front of the pro forma or the expected business performance, and then we measure against those standards all the way through. Is this not typically done in architecture and design? And if not, hello, why why not, right?
Yeah, no, it's kind of crazy, right? Like, the typical architecture process is up front, I'm going to sell you this idea that, and I'm going to design an office for you, and hopefully it's going to make you more collaborative or productive, but we're not going to agree on a KPI for what that actually is, and we're not going to measure what actually happened at the end of the project. There's definitely been companies experimenting with kind of performance-based contracts and stuff like that, but it's still sort of early days for kind of working out the mechanisms for that and working out how to get that into a business. But I think those kind of devices where architects end up maybe taking on more risk, having more upside if things perform well, to me it seems like a good way to kind of align incentives between the client and the architect.
So I think if I've read some of your commentary appropriately, you correct me if I'm wrong, We've got to radically change, not kind of change, we have to radically change the practice of architecture to maintain relevance. Or is the profession at risk?
I'm not sure if the profession is at risk. Like, there's always going to be a need for someone to build a cultural institution
that's just
wonderful for the building that it is, and it doesn't need a KPI to tell you that it's a great building.
Yeah.
But I think for these kind of more, say, like prosaic common pieces of architecture like offices or hotels or hospitals, like there are like key metrics that we want and that we expect from those spaces. And I think the threat of a company like WeWork is that WeWork potentially has the ability to get to some of that data and get to that. And yeah, if you're able to get there, then they'd be able to offer a client degree of performance that an architect just wouldn't be able to. And so I think for the architecture industry to stay relevant in that sense, they need to be able to kind of begin making some of these guarantees around performance.
Yeah. Wow. And yet, if we can't even measure success from building to building, or often even quantify our value, that's a big leap to moving to risk reward based contractual instrumentation, isn't it?
Yeah. And also I think maybe another thing that I kind of picked up at WeWork was, I think architecture is like one aspect of what makes a building successful, but it's also about the people that manage it. It's about the people that occupy it. It's about all these other kind of factors that go into it. And I'm not kind of sure how you pull that together, but it needs to be more than just space. It needs to be the kind of services around it and the technology and all of that that really creates a holistic experience for people.
Have you ever read the book by Ove Arup, Total Design?
No.
So, you know who I'm talking about. He had a philosophy of design that he articulated back in the 50s called Total Design, which is Solomon the Wise said, there's no new thing under the sun. Everything comes back around, right? Well, yeah. Here he is, you know, all these years later. And it's the idea of full collaborative design, and that everything that we design in architecture engineering is not done by an architect or engineer. It's informed by the spherical 360-degree awareness of anthropology and the environment and minerals and air movement and when we focus on total design, the outcomes are indisputable when it comes to the human experience. Mm-hmm. And he was writing about this, you know, decades and decades ago, and yet it seems to be what's in vogue today, at least in the thinking, this idea of collaborative human experience design.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you definitely get that a lot in like workplace design at the moment. This kind of holistic service design as a focus. Yeah.
Is research something near and dear to your heart, or is it been something that was a thing you needed to do?
No, it's, I did a PhD in it, and it's something that, I've always really enjoyed doing research and analyzing things, and WeWork was a really good vehicle for doing that. Yeah.
So we see organizations talking about research a lot in architecture today. We talked about it earlier, Kieran Timberlake has founded, they've kind of become the poster child for embedded research within practice kind of thing. HKS has established a very strong research practice. Dr. Upali Nanda out of University of Michigan is working with them, you know. And we can go on and on with others. But I fear that most research doesn't result in an embedded inform of design as much as it often results in a new marketing communications white paper that said we did some research and here were the results of it, which is pretty much trying to promote our services rather than inform us and teach us. How ought we to think about this? Because I'm not sure it's real research when it's Marcom oriented.
Yeah, I think it goes back to some of the earlier discussion that we had about incentives in the industry, right? Like the part of the process where the architect makes a difference in determining whether or not they win a project is really early on, and that marketing really matters. Whether or not the project performs as well as they expect isn't quite as important, although it matters obviously to the reputation. And I think the more that a company is beholden to performance targets and stuff like that, the more that research is going to be important, because they're going to need to know what's driving that performance. So I think we need to shift a lot of things for research to kind of gain that relevance. But there's definitely examples, I think, in the industry of people doing good research that does have impact on their projects. Yeah.
So we have an audience of tens of thousands of people, and the words of Dr. Daniel Davis are going to resonate in their ear. What is your advice to this great community of the built environment? What, if this was your last word to say to this environment, what would be your words of encouragement or of exhortation?
I think to think about the business as creatively as you think about the buildings, that there's a lot of opportunity to restructure and rethink about the kind of business model, and there's a lot of opportunity out there for pushing that forward.
You're changing the business model in a new way.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of This Is Design Intelligence, sponsored by the Tricord Group and VIM. The producer for This Is Design Intelligence is Laura Spells. Sound engineering by Jared Knabel. This has been a DI Media Group production.